This podcast is sponsored by Broster. When it comes to finding a one-source solution for all your food service and equipment needs, Broster literally means business. From innovative equipment like their new E-Series line of high-efficiency pressure fryers to one of their franchise-free trademark food programs featuring their world-famous, tender and juicy, genuine Broster chicken, Broster has been helping operators make their business better for over 65 years. Discover what Broster can mean for your business and visit broster.com today. Hey, Holly popping in here to say, have you registered for Create yet? It's our live event where you can rub elbows with other restaurant professionals and learn from some of your peers, no matter if you have 10 units or 10,000. For loyal listeners of this podcast who are restaurant operators, we're excited to announce that you can register for free. That's right, free. That's a $550 value at no charge to you. Just go to create.nrn.com and use the promo code EXTRASERVING, one word, at checkout. Hi, and welcome to Extra Serving, a Nation's Restaurant News podcast. I'm your host, Holly Petrie. Today on the pod, we're going to be talking about Panera's new drive-thru tech, Chipotle's first union, and a sneak preview of Create, the future of food service. On Takeaway with Sam Okus, Sam spoke with Tiffany Fielder, co-founder of Underground Food Court, which is part food court, part ghost kitchen, based in DC, and it's ushering in a more sophisticated new era for ghost kitchens and virtual brands. And be sure to check out First Bite, our daily morning podcast, where I dissect the top news of the day alongside an NRN editor. Now it's time to introduce my co-hosts.
I am Sam Okus, editor-in-chief of Nation's Restaurant News, and that is Tiffany Fielder.
Fielder.
Yes, that's right. It does. It throws you off because you think it's going to be Fielder. Fielder.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
I'm Leanne Zinsmeister, managing editor, and I have no feedback.
Just one error we had to correct. That's all.
I'm reading very fast. It's hard for me sometimes to keep up with the words that are happening in front of my face. You know, when like the words are just piling up. Sam, you read teleprompters. I feel like you know what it's like to just have words coming up in front of your face, and sometimes it's a little too much.
Well, sure. But that's why you also have to have somebody who's doing the scrolling for you. So something I didn't understand about teleprompters until I use it, which is that there's somebody controlling and they're following the speed of your voice. And so you're never racing the teleprompter, in other words, because somebody's doing it along with your talking. So we should invest in a teleprompter for our podcast. That could be fun.
That could be really fun. I like that. I like all the fancy gadgets.
I wouldn't
gadgets.
Give it to you. I don't trust it with you. I would probably give it to Leanne.
I've had that thought before with webinars. I've like set up a second monitor behind my laptop screen and like scrolled through my webinar script like as yep. I go. It's like
there are computer programs for this, I'm sure.
There have to be probably
something we could look into someday.
All right, well, let's start talking about news because I'm the host of this podcast and I say we talk about news right away.
Okay, well, putting her foot down.
Putting my foot down because, Sam, you have somewhere to be and we are going to not keep you.
Really? Do I?
You're in a hotel room.
I'm in a hotel room, yeah. I'm in a hotel room in Salt Lake City. I'm out here for Restaurantology, super excited about that. But it is tomorrow. So, I mean, there is a dinner tonight. But that is, I'm 2 hours behind you guys. So it is currently 12:30 in Utah. And I'm actually thinking about taking a nap. So that's where I need to be, is I need to be taking a nap.
Also, Sam has nowhere to be.
You know, our director would argue that you have better things to do.
Oh, the whole approve the print issue thing. Yeah, I guess I could do that.
Yeah. It's also arguably one of our most important issues, and it would
also
be
true.
Very happy
but Leanne, I woke up at 3 a.m., so I just feel like I've earned a nap today, is all I'm trying to say. Yes, the issue of NRN is super important. So is a sweet, sweet nap.
But why is this issue?
Take your nap. Just
why is this issue of NRN so important? Can you guys tell us?
What a segue. Oh, I'm so glad you asked, Holly. Because this is our Create preview issue. So this is the issue we'll be distributing at Create. And everybody who is shamefully not coming to Create, yes, shame, for shame, if you're not coming to Create, you can get just a little teensy weensy tidbit of Create in this issue. But the much more robust version, you of course have to come to Denver to get that. But yes, we've got our creators, honorees we are recognizing in this issue, our hot concepts. All of those honorees will be in Denver at Create sharing their stories. We've got previews of several of the Create speakers, lots of juicy content in there related to Create. So yes, go to Denver, join us in Denver at Create, and you can get your copy there.
Great. And we will talk more about Create later in the episode. We'll give you guys a big preview of what's going to happen. But until then, hold tight because we have some news to discuss, including that Chipotle has its first union. Woohoo!
I felt like there was supposed to be a sound.
Or boo.
Am I allowed to
felt like
that?
There was supposed to be a sound effect there or something. Yeah, yay or boo, depending on where you fall on this whole matter. Was that a sound effect?
That was a sound. No, that was just me.
That was really feeble.
It was so quiet. I was like, Holly, are your neighbors cheering for something? I can't tell. It's like sounds like it's on the other side of a wall.
That's some great coordination. If you had your neighbors waiting there to do your sound effects live.
No, that was some cheering that I threw in.
Well, I can't imagine Chipotle is cheering.
There were no boo sound effects, so I could not throw a boo in.
Okay, gotcha. Yeah, look, I mean, we've been talking about Starbucks union for a while now. Briefly talked about the Chipotle union situation. The first Chipotle restaurant that was supposed to unionize was shut down rather controversially. And that was in Maine. And now Chipotle in Michigan has taken the mantle and unionized. Who knows? It could be some start of something big like what Starbucks is facing or not. It remains to be seen. One restaurant out of a system of 4,000, I want to say.
3,000.
4,000 Chipotles. 3,000. Okay, let's call it between 3 and 4,000. You know, that is, it's a drop in the bucket, of course, but it's when you get into the Starbucks scenario where hundreds and hundreds are, it builds the momentum. That's when the situation can get a little bit out of control. So TBD on what happens from this, but certainly I know, Chipotle is going to have to, this could be a big situation for Chipotle to pay attention to here. And I mean, as we have talked about on this podcast, unfortunately in Starbucks situation, a lot of their reactions to the unionization have cast Starbucks in not the greatest light in the corporate team and just some of the moves that have been made. And so, maybe to Chipotle's benefit, they have maybe a little bit more of a model of what not to do, perhaps with what Starbucks has been doing, but we don't know because again, they shut down that first one that was trying to unionize and that was rather controversial.
On the other hand, I feel like we know so much about. Well, nobody really knows what's going on at Starbucks, but we know what they're putting out there. We know about the COO leaving and whatever is happening with the CEO position this fall. But on the other hand, they just had record-breaking revenues in their last full financial quarter. And so from the outside, which is hard to position ourselves in, Starbucks seems to be doing just fine.
For
better or for worse, depending on your opinion on this thing. And so maybe Chipotle seeing, well, they have record-breaking revenues. And so maybe we can just keep, maybe we can get away with behaving the way Starbucks is behaving without.
Yeah. Yeah, it's true. I mean, obviously revenue makes up for a lot of things, right? But simultaneously, if 3,000 restaurants decide to unionize, which wouldn't happen, but if hundreds of stores do unionize, then Chipotle has a very significant issue on its hands. I think it's interesting this is all happening on the same day that California is passing this regulation on the fast food industry that's going to really standardize conditions and minimum wage in fast food in California. Particularly interesting just because that's where Chipotle is based now. And, California, of course, is an incredibly aggressive and progressive state with their regulations on these things. And so not surprising that that California would be the first to come out and do something like this. But I guess what's interesting is, like, everybody's trying to find, I think not everybody, but, you know, what people are trying to find is they're trying to find this place where fast food workers can be, can have better working conditions, be better, have better pay, and all around just have an improvement of their livelihood. And don't we all want that? You know, like, so how do you get there, I guess, is what the big question is. Some states could try to regulate it, like California. That won't be very popular, I don't think, across the U.S. Not many states would go that direction. Certainly would never come have a national regulation like that. And some workers take it into their own hands with unionizing. But the companies should be doing this, and most of them are talking about it, right? Like, the companies, a lot of the companies profess that they are doing these things, but not always putting their money where their mouth is. And so, so at the end of the day, I think everybody wants the same thing, which is everybody wants fast food workers to be treated better and, you know, ultimately have a more fair wage. But the means to that end is really what is in question here. And that's why you're seeing unionization efforts like this.
Well, what I found really interesting about the Chipotle story is that the Chipotle workers actually unionized with the local Teamsters rather than unionizing with the Chipotle union, Chipotle United, which they have a Chipotle union that they formed called Chipotle United. But this group decided to unionize with the local Teamsters instead. So I actually found that really interesting, meaning that the next Chipotle union to form has the option to form with either the local Teamsters, or which is a local union, or to form with the Chipotle United. So it kind of has an option to be more localized rather than becoming more centralized like Starbucks has done. So I think that that could actually go more into what you were kind of talking about, Sam, with local laws and the way that it impacts everybody else. Because I think that it'll vary state by state what people do, and it'll vary state by state how Chipotle reacts to it, because it depends which way people decide to go. If they decide to go with the local Teamsters, or if they decide to go with the Chipotle United. So I think that that'll be really interesting to see too.
Yeah. One thing to say, you know, just not to sound like this is all, like, certainly not trying to pile up on Chipotle here. I mean, one thing to point out with Chipotle is they have the DNA to treat their employees better, right? I mean, that's a lot of what this company was founded on. Last year at Create, we had Monty Moran, the former CEO of Chipotle, was our keynote speaker, and he wrote a whole book on this. And I read that book, and it was fantastic. I mean, the model that they used to build their culture for the first 20 years in business was really kind of unprecedented, and it was unmatched in the industry. And it's not to say that that the corporate team that has existed post Monty Moran is, destroying that model or anything. But I just wonder, like, you know, maybe they've reprioritized, right? But the point being is that when you think about something like the Restaurateur program at Chipotle, which was Monty Moran's baby, and that was all about investing in your teams and incentivizing them to do better and to grow and to climb the ladder, to see restaurants as a career, and rewarding them in the end for their good work. You know, that's really the jewel of Chipotle in many ways, has been copied by other companies to great success. You know, that's the DNA that Chipotle has that they can really tap into, I think, here to maybe slow the momentum of unionization and not become like Starbucks. So it'll be interesting to see if they try to do that at all.
All right. So Panera has some new drive-through technology that includes some AI. So let's talk about that, because we've heard a lot of new tech things happening all around the space. But Panera is kind of doing some interesting things. They developed their first to-go only unit this year in Chicago, and now they're testing this AI at their drive-throughs. So what do you guys think about Panera's new tech innovations? Bueller?
Panera, you know.
My long silence was my invitation to Leanne to start.
No, I got that. Thanks. It just took a second. I mean, Panera is frequently on the front end of some of these tech developments. They were one of the first early in the pandemic to do like curbside geotechnology. So like they would be alerted when you drove up. So I think it makes sense. I'm curious to see how it plays out. I'm skeptical of a lot of robot things, but especially one that's supposed to understand you when you're speaking. So we'll see how it goes, but I'm intrigued. I also don't frequent drive-thrus myself, so I don't know, like from a consumer perspective, how it will be received, but
yeah, like move away. Let the Ohioan take this question. You guys don't even know what drive-thrus are.
You literally threw it to me.
Well, I mean, I figured you could comment on it without saying, oh, but I don't do drive-thrus because I'm a New Yorker. Okay. Anyway, let me set it straight here. So yeah, because Holly's probably like, I've never had Panera. What's a drive-thru?
We've talked about my love of Panera before. Okay.
That's fair. Okay. I went a step too far. My bad. So look, I mean, I think this is the future of drive-thru, right? I mean, this is the future of QSR and very likely fast casual too, is automation. And what's the easiest role to automate? The drive-through employee, because it's an interaction that is not face-to-face for the most part until you get to the window, right? Not only that, and I've spent a lot of time covering the drive-through industry, as folks in this industry would know, now 13 years following drive-throughs and knowing it very closely. So drive-through order accuracy is a real issue in the industry. Accuracy is actually surprisingly bad. At some companies, worse than others, of course. But I mean, typically you see something like 80 to 90% accuracy in a drive-through. And that's one point where it's like, you're going to really anger your customer if you give them the wrong order. And by the way, having done many drive-throughs recently myself, I almost get an inaccurate order like every single time now. And there's a whole customer service part of it that's connected to labor that we could get into another day. But the point is that when you automate the drive-through employee, you inherently improve the accuracy, because depending on the success of that AI, it's not going to have human error where it punches in the wrong thing. It's going to get it exactly right, assuming it's a strong AI. And guess what? Technology today has advanced to where AI is very strong, right? So it makes a lot of sense for QSR in the drive-through lane in particular. The other thing about the drive-through employee is they're often the highest paid person on a staff at QSR outside of the general manager, because most QSRs, it's 70% of your business. And so if that's not your best person at the drive-through window, you're doing it wrong, because most of your business is going by that person. So if you're investing a lot in the drive-through operation and you're having order accuracy issues, you might have hospitality issues, well, automate it, because you take all of those issues out of the equation, streamline it. You don't have to pay for that person. You might still want to have a friendly face handing the bag out the window, of course, but you could redeploy your staff to make it make sense for you. So, but just kind of walking this up to the Panera situation here, which is, you know, we've been talking about for months now, this idea that the industry is really bifurcating into sort of the convenience side of things and the sort of hospitality side of things. And so you're going to really have full service over here saying, we're really going to lean into hospitality post-pandemic because people want human interaction, they want to experience. And QSR and fast casual is going to be, we're going to lean into affordability and convenience. People want it very quickly and very affordably, and we can give that to them, right? So you're going to have these two lanes. And what I think is interesting about Panera is I think this is kind of watching Panera take a side, because Panera, when it first came out, was like, you went there and spent a couple hours. You took your computer and you sat there and, you know, did work or homework or whatever. I mean, it was fancy. And now for all of those things Leanne was talking about before, for all of the additions they've done, or maybe you were saying this, Holly, but just like the you know, off-premises only locations, digital only locations, they're really taking away that hospitality piece of it that I think they were kind of known for up front. And it's not a bad business decision, because I think Panera is recognizing that they are probably going to be more successful in that side of the lane where it's convenience and affordability focused. So anyway, I have a lot of thoughts on that clearly, but I really just do think that This kind of technology is critical to the restaurant industry, critical to drive-thrus in particular, and Panera is recognizing that this could be a boon to them. Now, it's only a test in, what, 2 locations, so TBD on whether it's going to work for them, but I will not be surprised if we see Panera really invest a lot more in drive-thrus going forward. Less than half of their system currently has drive-thrus, and I'm sure we're going to watch that really ramp up.
Well, something like 80% of their orders last year were off premises. Like, it was some crazy number around there. I mean, so Panera knows where its money is coming from. So it's investing in exactly where it knows that it needs to be investing in. So it's not, it's doing exactly what it needs to do. It's not that consumer who was sitting there for hours doesn't exist anymore.
Right. I mean, this is making the business more efficient, recognizing the direction of their consumers, where it will go in the future, and just acknowledging that, you know, they can really tighten the business up around the off-premises occasion and what the customer actually wants from Panera, and not waste resources in trying to have these big boxes, you know, and a focus on hospitality, which is not to say they can't have some hospitality. It's just to say that they can really limit their workforce in each restaurant and probably, you know, do just as fine from a revenue perspective.
Yeah. So, I mean, I feel like we really covered Panera. So I feel like now it's time to get into Create, which is really exciting. I feel like it should be our happy news for the week.
Okay. Well,
woohoo.
Go on.
Happy news. Happy news. Happy news.
Oh, Holly. Ooh, wow. Really going for that high note. If you end up recording one of these and making it a key command, Holly, like you were talking about last week, don't make it that one.
You're welcome.
Yeah.
I feel like they,
all our listeners.
No, they were all like, that was incredible, Holly. They're all just like, wow.
Whatever you got to tell yourself. Okay. Beautiful. Well, happy news. So yes, we'll start with Create. That is coming up here in almost 3 weeks, a little over 3 weeks away. We will be in Denver. And look, we had an awesome time last year at Create. Last year was the inaugural Create. And you know, we've really positioned this as not your average restaurant conference. This is not a traditional conference by any means. We're really kind of turning that paradigm upside down by having very fast-paced content, a much more of a focus on one-on-one sessions with leaders and not panels necessarily. We have a couple panels, but most of our content is going to be one-on-one. And it's a broad spectrum of folks from across the restaurant industry, just a wide variety of expertise, restaurant types, size of restaurants. So no matter what you do in the restaurant industry, there's something for you at Create. And, you know, I can't emphasize enough just the importance of getting out there, being in person with people who are doing what you're doing. You know, we all have virtual fatigue. We are all tired of participating in, you know, virtual events, although if you're not, we do have a lot of those for you too. So please keep going to those. But the point is that you should get out, go to in-person events. And this is just a perfect opportunity to do that. And so September 19th through 21st, incredible speakers, you know, leader, executives, CEOs of Dine Brands, PF Chang's, Torchy's Tacos, Duck Donuts, high-level executives from, you know, Chipotle, lots and lots of highly respected companies that are going to be there. Several emerging restaurateur brands. I'm getting all those words confused now, but anyway, you know, going to be represented there too. You know, people who have maybe 2, 3, 5 locations and, but have a really fascinating story and fascinating product and lots to share about, you know, their journey. So, come join us there. You've maybe already heard, but if you put in the promo code Extra Serving, you get to come for free. And,
always hawking that code.
Denver. Always hawking that code. That's right. You know, I mean, we want to honor our podcast listeners. They are our VIPs. And so who would we be if we didn't return the favor by extending this free registration?
You are our VIPs, everyone that's listening. And we are going to have podcasts at Create. So if you would like to be involved in a podcast at Create, please email me or Sam. Our emails are very easy to find, but mine is holly.petri@informa.com. Sam's is sam.okus@informa.com. Please email either one of us if you'd like to be included in a podcast. We would love to have you. We'll have a whole podcast booth. We'll be doing podcasts the entire time from Create. We'll also be doing live podcasts. So just be sure to stop by the booth, email us, set up a time. You can watch podcasts. You can be a part of podcasts. It's a podcast party.
How many times can you say the word podcast?
I don't know, but it was starting to really like, it was really starting to get tired in my head.
You don't want to give them my email address and see how many of them.
I wasn't even going to try it, Leanne.
They can just figure it out.
It's really easy. Super easy. It's just Leanne Dausensmeister.
Some people on our staff can't even get it right, so I wasn't even going to try it. Well, thank you guys so much for joining me today. It's been a pleasure. And I'm going to throw it over to our interview.
Thanks, Holly.
This podcast is sponsored by Broster. When it comes to finding a one-source solution for all your food service and equipment needs, Broster literally means business. From innovative equipment like their new E-Series line of high-efficiency pressure fryers to one of their franchise-free trademark food programs featuring their world-famous, tender and juicy, genuine Broster chicken, Broster has been helping operators make their business better for over 65 years. Discover what Broster can mean for your business and visit Broster.com today.
Well, let's dive right in then, Holly. I mean, I'm excited to talk to you today. Obviously, Next Level is both literally and figuratively near my beating heart. This is not just a brand of opportunism where we thought this whole plant-based vegan thing was going to be sexy and lucrative. So we decided to get early in on it and be America's first 100% plant-based burger joint and first burger joint chain. This was an outflow of a desire to share a journey that my family had been on, going from a very much not plant-based diet to a completely plant-based diet, and to meet the people where they were, which is, I mean, let's just be real. You don't get much more Americana than the classic burger joint. And we wanted to basically take that and make it something that was not built for the 20th century, like a McDonald's or even a Shake Shack, frankly. But something that was built for the 21st century, keeping climate change in mind and vitality and optimal life, living life to the fullest sort of mentality. So I will keep going. I will pause off the soapbox, hand the mic to you. Where do you want to start?
You're welcome to keep going on your soapbox, but I'd love to talk about exactly what, you know, your personal journey was, because I'd love to hear about your own family's journey from going from meat eaters to plant-based, because that's a hard transition. I did it myself years ago. You? I went back to eating meat, but now I'm journeying back into plant-based again. So nice. It's a cycle.
Hey, everybody's on their own path, but good for you. I mean, you know, whether people end up, you know, vegan or, I mean, I prefer not carnivore because that's tough to justify in any which way, but you know, the reasonable ends of the spectrum, let's put it that way. It is so easy for us to codify things into some sort of almost religious, you know, zealot approach. And instead, it's about, you know, understanding your body, understanding science, which, of course, both are evolving, and figuring out what works best for you and what works best for the planet. So I'm excited. I always love to chat with people that have been on that journey too, wherever they happen to be. So let me go all the way back. So I grew up on 100% not plant-based diet, as I said. My mom made everything from scratch, and I mean everything. I grew up with cookies and pies and cakes on the counter, and a mom who loved to cook and was very, very good at it. I did not know a vegetarian until I was about 27, and that vegetarian was my wife, who decided that she was going to become a vegetarian, and she did it for ethical reasons, right, for animals, which I said to her famously, at least in our household now, I support you and I will support you, but do not try to guilt me into becoming a vegetarian, because that is never, and I mean never, going to happen. So flash
famous
forward.
Couple, last words.
Oh, I know. I know. I know. It's God or the universe, depending on your personal belief system, has a sense of humor. So flash forward a couple of years, and my wife's journey had progressed from vegetarian to starting to dabble in this vegan thing, this plant-based thing, which I was making increasing fun of her for, because I got not eating animals, right? I mean, it just makes some sort of intuitive sense that people would care for animals. And if you're caring for animals, you may not want to eat them, right? Now, I was continuing to eat animals and I didn't have any problem with it. In fact, frankly, my diet at this point, I'm about 27, 2010, is, you know, consisting of 7, 8, 9, 10 pounds of red meat a week. I'm not exaggerating. I'm talking double steak burritos for lunch. I'm talking 16 to 24 ounce porterhouses for dinner, always with a big salad, quite often with a baked potato. But that was, in my opinion, the cat's meow. And I thought I was eating the best, healthiest, most optimal diet. So 2010, on the 10th anniversary of, as my wife's exploring this vegan path, we find out that my mom's breast cancer is back. Okay. So she's 10 years clean from breast cancer. She beat it when my younger brother and I were in high school. And she had always said, cause it was so brutal. They didn't expect her to beat it the first time. They caught it too late. There's a whole story there. But she did. And as she would say, she did it for her boys. And that still brings a smile, almost a tear to my eye. But we found out 10 years after the fact that it was back, and then had metastasized, and we lost her less than 2 weeks after we found out that it was back. So, and as you can imagine, this was like a ripped raw experience. So I'm 27, younger brother's 26. My mom is 56 years old. And, you know, I'm literally holding her hand as she passes from this life to the next. 4 days later, my son turns 3. So I'm sitting at the breakfast table in our kitchen in Dallas, Texas, of all places. And I'm in the oil and gas private equity business at the time. I've got, you know, fancy suits and nice cars and all that jazz. And, you know, thinking I'm living high on the hog and living my best life. And I am just, you know, just torn open because I've just, you know, buried my mom, quite literally watched her pass in front of my eyes, and I'm watching my son, and there's like this circularity to it, you know, and I'm like, dear Lord, I do not want to have to say goodbye to my son until I'm like healthy at 100, which ironically is the name of a book that I would eventually read. Like, I wanted to get myself to 100, God willing, healthy, so that I could get him to, like, you know, 75, right? Because I felt like in that moment, if I can get him to 75, like, I'm doing my job. And so at the time, my wife had been exploring this vegan path, as I mentioned, and she had bought all of these books, many of which you're probably familiar with, the China Study, Esselstyn's work, Campbell's work. Ironically, for at the period of time that we were at this point, I thought it was hilarious. The Kind Diet by Alicia Silverstone, which I made ample fun of as an ignorant 27-year-old. I'm like, you're going to get diet advice from Alicia Silverstone? Way harsh, Ty. And I say that with a tremendous amount of affection for Alicia Silverstone, but it just seems so silly. But honestly, and someday I hope I get to meet Alicia and say thank you. I was just kind of scoffing at this thing and flipping through it. And then she cites her sources and she points out some other books that my wife, of course, had already purchased. And I started picking these up, like How to Prevent Reverse Heart Disease by Caldwell Esselstyn. A very famous cardiologist. And all of a sudden I'm going, holy smokes, like my paradigm may be completely backward. And maybe the cancer and the heart disease that's in my family on my mother's side, maybe this isn't just a genetic Russian roulette. Maybe there's actually some cause and effect here. And, you know, my mother's father had four heart attacks by the time he was in his 70s, had had four open heart surgeries. His only son, younger than my mother, passed away from a widowmaker 6 months after my mom died. And my aunt had had breast cancer at this point, you know, probably 20 years earlier. And so I'm starting to go, these correlations are pretty compelling. and they're pretty associated with pretty much everything I eat. From the red meat to the, I mean, the Chipotle burritos this guy has put away in his life. Yeah, you would just, most people like did one of these numbers. I'm like, all right, double steak, extra cheese, extra sour cream. Nope, that's not extra sour cream. I'm talking extra sour cream. And so I didn't say anything to my wife. Again, I'm 27 at the time. And I go, okay, I'm going to try this plant-based thing for like 30 days, which at this point, I know, Holly, Sarah, this sounds so ridiculous because you would swear I was talking about like, you know, eating with my hand only, not using my mouth. Like that, there was, it was such an impossible thing to not have animal protein in every meal. And I'm talking breakfast, lunch, and dinner, and anywhere in between. But I started it, and I had, you know, I was pretty skeptical I'd be able to finish the 30 days, but I'm also pretty focused and committed when I want to be, need to be. And I got 2 weeks into it and I was sold. Like I felt good. I felt really good. I felt like at work stress just seemed to roll off my back in a way it wasn't before. My sleep just got better and it was already at that point pretty darn good. My workouts in the gym, I was like, damn, I just feel like I could keep going. And so, you know, 2 weeks turned into 30 days. And of course I told my wife about 2 weeks in when I was feeling good about it. Didn't want to get her hopes up. And so I just kept going and it wasn't an overnight thing. I was still eating seafood at the time. But I think frankly, looking back and just realizing the things I pulled out of my diet and the things that I replaced it with, it's like, well, no joke. You felt better, dude. I mean, at the end of the day, you are either fueling your body for vitality or you're weighing it down. And so much of our American landscape of dining is literally just getting in our way. Calories sure to burn, but there's a reason most people go to Starbucks and get a quadruple venti macchiato, extra caffeine, please, and thank you, because they had a meal for lunch that was not there to fuel them, but was there to put them down for a nap. And so 3 years or so goes by, Holly, and my entire family moves to a plant-based diet. And, you know, I'm continuing to do well. I've made my first million by the time I'm 30. At this point, we've moved to Southern California. I run a branch office for my company in Newport Beach. You know, I rock the nice suits. I drive the BMW M3. And, you know, we're living in one of the most beautiful places in the world, right? All American dream. But I am staring at 30 and 31 coming in hot. And I'm going, my life, my professional life has nothing attached to it but dollar bills. All I do is make money, which I was very thankful for because many years earlier, that's exactly what I set out to do. Originally, I was going to go to law school, but my wife and I found out that we're going to have my son about 10 years ahead of schedule. So I ended up in venture capital and eventually private equity. And all I wanted to do was provide well for my family. And I was so thankful to have hit that. But I was literally staring down this barrel of, at the end of the day, if I don't do something different, that's all my life is going to revolve around. And I'd watched my father 35 years as probably one of the most successful geophysicists in the oil and gas industry, no connection to me ending up in it, hate 34 of the 35 years. Right. And I didn't want to follow that same path. I wanted to follow a path that really boiled down, distilled down to one word. And that one word was legacy. It was legacy. And so, you know, my wife had had this crazy idea for this plant-based burger concept the first time in 2010 when we started this process. And, you know, I had said it, you know, the restaurant business is probably the only business that is, you know, more risky than the oil and gas business. So are you crazy? I am not going down that path. Famous last words. You see a trend here. So 2013, we have a conversation. It's May of 2013. I'm going on my umpteenth investment conference trip for the year to Vegas, which God love Vegas and people love to go to Vegas. I've been there more times than I can count. And I never, ever want to go back. love you, Las Vegas, but I've been there, done that. And so I'm going off on this trip again. I have this really strange conversation with Sierra where all of a sudden the idea of starting a plant-based burger concept for the first time doesn't sound like a one-way ticket to, you know, the loony bin, right? Like where I should just, you know, just consider myself absolutely certifiably crazy. And so I'm thinking about this and I get on the plane and I go to Las Vegas and we go through the dog and pony show. And I'm with one of my colleagues who he and I had gotten relatively close during our time together. And it, you know, that Holly, those times in your life where like everything seems to line up, you know, where you're just like, all right, this is weird. This was one of those times. And I won't go into all the details of the stars aligning, but one of the ones that has stuck with me is that I'm sitting at one of Gordon Ramsay's new restaurant concepts with this colleague of mine. And we're talking about, you know, broad strokes business and the concept that we're sitting in. And I say something to the tune of, but restaurants are like the worst investment in the world. And one of the riskiest. And he goes, yeah, that's probably true. But what if it was a healthy fast food or burger concept? What if it was like, because there's nothing really healthy, like Subway is as healthy as for the most part you're going to get. And that's pretty, as my 15-year-old son would say, sus, right? From a health perspective. No offense, Subway. And so, you know, I go, huh, that's interesting. And then the waiter walks up and starts talking, because at the time Steve Wynn had made sure vegan options were available in all of his casinos, and uninitiated, he starts talking about how really good this vegan stuff is. And so I'm just sitting back and I'm going, okay, this is strange, because I'm really thinking about for the first time, like pulling the trigger on what's probably an insane but might be inspired path. And so a number of other things happened that weekend. Those were just the catalyst for continued conversation and a few other stars aligning. And I come back from this trip, Holly, and I look at my wife and I say, Sierra, let's take a really hard look at doing this. And so about 2 months later, I hung it up. I resigned as executive vice president of my firm. We put the house on the market and we moved to Oregon to start America's first plant-based burger joint with two kids under the age of five and a, you know, dream of what this could become, understanding that we could be burying a ton of money, a breathtaking amount of time and effort and energy into something that the world wasn't that excited about. And so less than a year later, so I resigned on July 31st of 2013. And that following July, before I had turned 31, we opened up America's first plant-based burger joint. And the doors got blown off. People were so excited. The line was out the door. And we took a step back and we realized, okay, maybe this thing that we thought, you know, our family would enjoy, this dream, because, you know, Holly, Next Level isn't just about being plant-based. It's about plant-based ingredients, absolutely. But it's also about doing as much as we can do everything right. It's about organic produce. It's about a non-GMO commitment. And it's about living wages. And so we took this value set, this, again, insane value set, and said, okay, let's not just tackle what's probably the most difficult business in the world, and certainly one of the most difficult. And this is coming out of oil and gas, which is a breathtakingly difficult capital-intensive world. It still doesn't hold a candle to the complexities and the challenges of the restaurant business. Let's not just be one of the first multi-unit plant-based concepts, because at this point, you've got two, Native Foods and Veggie Grill, right? And neither were plant-based burger joints, neither were committed to organics, and neither were committed to non-GMOs. Great concepts, doing some awesome stuff, and both were trailblazers, but not doing what we were setting out to do. And then we layered on living wages, way before anybody was talking about living wages, because for us, we said, how would we build a business from scratch and just build it right? how would we build a restaurant concept for the 21st century? And, you know, frankly, and this can be true for us at times in our life and in different ways, sometimes ignorance is bliss, at least up until the point it kills you. But what we didn't really understand was how tall an order that was. And we were either ignorant enough, convinced, convicted enough that it was right to keep focused and to stay on it until it became a business model that was cooking with gas. And that was something that took tremendous effort, but we accomplished in the last few years and have turned Next Level from a, oh, that's a great idea, into a great business, into a business that is competing with some of the best in the restaurant business when it comes to all of the economics and the things that we talk about when we talk about restaurant finance. So it's blood, it's sweat, it's tears, but it's driven by a triple bottom line philosophy of doing good, having fun, and making money. And our commitment has been that we don't sacrifice those first two to get to the third. And we just happen to see the writing on the wall. What I couldn't have anticipated, and thankfully is the case, is that this space has electrified, and not just in the restaurant space, but of course beyond, with their billion-dollar IPO, Impossible with their multi-billion-dollar valuation in the private markets, and people waking up to the fact that climate change isn't something that our grandkids or our kids need to worry about, which I would still push back and say they are your grandkids and they are your kids. So I'm not really sure how that's a problem to kick down the road. But we're seeing it around the world and from one side of this country to the other. And I think, and we believe as an organization, that the future is bright, but that it's up to all of us to make sure of it. And all of us in this unbelievable, unique moment in human history are either going to rise to the occasion or not. And, you know, at the end of the day, you can wait for somebody else to do something about it, or you can take that first step. And at Next Level, what we allow people to do, because we're not, we love our vegans and our vegetarians. My family, of course, is vegan. We eat a plant-based diet. We lead a plant-based lifestyle. But there are, you know, roughly 4 or 5% of the total population is vegan. You know, roughly, you could argue 10% vegetarian. That's a squishy number. But what's amazing is 10% of millennials are leaning vegan. What's amazing is that we just hosted a Pride event for the Boys and Girls Club up in Seattle. And it was Next Level Burger on one side and Dick's Drive-In on the other side of options for these 200 kids. And 40% of them chose the vegan option. So for me, what that tells me is that the world is waking up, and it's waking up to a more sustainable future. And at the end of the day, what we allow people to do, because most of our guests are flexitarian, is we allow people to have their cake and eat it too, to enjoy the burger, the fries, and the shake, but feel great about their impact on the planet, feel great about the impact on their waistline, if I'm being real, and feel good afterward. And for me, and for us at Next Level, that is just a winning combination. Like, nobody loses there. And so why not do that at least, you know, at least some of the time? And so if I get you half the time, if Next Level gets you in the door half the time, and the other half the time you're at Shake Shack or McDonald's or wherever your heart takes you, you know, that's your decision. But we will be here for you when you're ready for an awesome meal that you can feel good about in all the right ways.
Well, I've got to say, you guys just opened up in Denver.
We did.
And we will be in Denver for Create. So I will be at a Next Level Burger in Denver.
Right on. For sure. Well, it is a date, Holly, and I will warn you to bring as big an appetite as you can, because we have got an awesome and expansive menu for you, and I've got some recommendations, so maybe we can meet up and I'll point you in the right direction at Next Level.
Well, so as somebody with a lot of foresight, I mean, you seem to be at the forefront of everything. You are at the forefront of a living wage, at the forefront of a plant-based movement. I mean, what do you kind of see as the future of the plant-based movement, as the future of restaurants? You seem to be sort of almost like a guru here.
Well, my wife would chuckle at that for sure. But I appreciate that. I think that at the end of the day, we are in a hyper evolution moment for our species because we have to, right? We're waking up to the fact that the world is not just going to exist as it has for the last 100 years or so. If we do not do things differently, right? From single use plastics, which are polluting our oceans, to carbon emissions going into the atmosphere, to the water that we're starting to realize may not last forever, you know, whether it's Lake Mead or countries other than the United States that are literally starting to struggle with either too little or what we're seeing in Pakistan. I mean, right now, most people are oblivious to. We're talking millions of people impacted. I mean, it's just devastating. And we have to wake up to that, whether we want to or not. And so, you know, macro, big picture, I think we're going to have to figure out how to have 7 or 8 or 9 billion people on this planet. And we're going to have to figure out how we do that sustainably and in a way that we're set up for success, not just for now, but for the future. And so I think every one of our businesses and every one of our habits is going to have to be underwritten by a sustainable either evolution or replacement. And of course, we've seen that with Tesla in the vehicle space, and they're not going to stop there, whether it's, you know, robots or what have you, or solar panels. We see one of the most significant impacts on a day-to-day basis that we can have as a species is choosing what we eat intelligently. And so when it comes to either evolving or replacing a 20th century business model that frankly is still the McDonald's of the world with its $45 billion in US sales a year, that is based on something that does not work for the future. And it is only a matter of time before they evolve that business model or it is replaced. Now, McDonald's is big enough that the evolution is almost inevitably what's going to happen, whether that's cell cultured meat or what have you. But everything is going to change this century because it has to. And so when I go to the restaurant business and I go, okay, if this is truly one of the best ways that we can help people make a good decision on a daily basis, because Holly, you probably know this based on sharing a bit of your journey, but you can cut your carbon emissions in half and upwards of 90%+ by eating a plant-based meal for breakfast, lunch, or dinner. Okay. And so, you know, if that is the easiest thing you can do and the most effective thing you can do, why not do that as often as you can, right? Take your shower, because we all want you to take your shower, you know, ride your bike to work. That's awesome. But at the end of the day, the most significant thing you can do is not, you know, skip the drive, as crazy as that sounds. It's not skip the shower, as important as water conservation is. It is choosing what you eat intelligently and making sure that as often as possible, it is truly sustainable, not from a marketing perspective, but from a brass tacks perspective. So I'm excited. I've got 2 kids growing up in a very strange world, and not just the last 2.5 years of the coronavirus, but against the backdrop of climate change, against the backdrop of us as a country figuring out who we really are. But I do believe that the human species is breathtakingly innovative, and I think very adaptable. And for those of you that have seen Moneyball, right, Sarah, Holly, if you haven't, I recommend it. Brad Pitt, you know, playing the professional who's looking at baseball completely differently, slaps his hands together as another scout is saying, "That's not how we do baseball," and goes, "Adapt or die." And at the end of the day, I think that's, I hate to be over the top, but I kind of roll that way anyway. That's kind of where we are. So I think it's adapt or die time. We either figure it out, we evolve our businesses, or we replace our businesses. And we make sure that not just for our great grandkids or our grandkids, or even for our children, but for even ourselves, that we are making sure that the near future and the far out future is a bright place.
All right. Well, I can't let you go without talking about the food at Next Level. We sure. have to talk about the food because I'm hungry already thinking about it, thinking about when I'm going to be in Denver in 3 weeks to eat some of it. So let's talk about the food.
Let's talk about it. So we were on 9 News in Denver yesterday. So we opened up our Denver flagship location the Saturday before last. That's my hometown. I was born there. I met my wife there after the Marine Corps. We were both going to Metro State University in Denver. My son was born there. And, you know, at least a quarter, if not half, my heart's still there. And so bringing Next Level there is our ninth restaurant over the past many years was pretty magical. But there is, and for anybody that's a restaurateur, when you build a restaurant, you never know if somebody's going to show up or not. Like, you obviously think they are going to show up, or you wouldn't spend the time and the energy and the dollar bills for it, but you just never know. And so we kind of waited with bated breath. And we had the most monster opening with hundreds of people in line waiting hours happily for what we were bringing to the Mile High City. And so yesterday we were on the news there talking about it. And we had a very nice fella who was the news anchor come over, and he's like, "Man, this smells like a burger." And I said, "Yes, it does smell like a burger. And, you know, this shake," and he goes, "Oh my gosh, the shake is amazing. What is it?" I said, "That is our thick mint shake. And yes, that is a sustainable shake." And then he looked at our fries, our special fries made with organic American grown potatoes topped with organic sauteed onions and cheese and special sauce. And he's like, "Oh my gosh, this is sacrifice," you know? And so that's the whole point. Like, it's not, you don't have to sacrifice. The question has moved from not why would you eat plant-based, but why wouldn't you? It tastes awesome. It's great for you. It's slam dunk more sustainable, right? From a climate change perspective. And so that's what you find on our menu, Holly, and a huge spectrum of offerings from the classic fast food style burger to a apex of a veggie burger, like our signature, you know, which is one of our top sellers. It's a organic mushroom quinoa patty topped with garlic thyme mayo, organic avocado, you know, in between whole grain buns. And I can eat like three of these things. I mean, they're just so good. And I have probably had 1,000 of these burgers, Holly, over the last many years, maybe more. But you know what hits me every time I have it? Is when I get done, I go, I feel like $1 million. Like every time, I just feel so good. And it almost surprises me every time. And I don't know, maybe that speaks to my intelligence level. I don't know. But, you know, I just come back, and that's what hit me, kind of bringing this full circle. That is what hit me at 27 years old. It wasn't like I'm going to do this for, you know, grandiose reasons. Frankly, I wanted to try to be healthy to 100 for my family. And then I realized, holy smokes, I feel great. And then I just kept going. And then, of course, awareness for things like sustainability and climate change, things like awareness for the rights of animals and what goes into a standard factory farm, which I have yet to meet anyone who stands behind, including sportsmen who love to hunt. Like, nobody that I have met. And maybe if I hung out with some Cargill, you know, board members, they'd argue with me why it's okay. But I have yet to meet anybody, no pun intended, who is like, "Yes, I am pro factory farm," right? Like, you know, I meet people that are like, I believe in hunting, or I believe in grass fed, you know, sustainably raised beef. You know, okay, we can have those conversations. I may see that differently. But at the end of the day, nobody is on board with this horrifically. And I'm not just talking about for the animals, but from a sustainability and a conservation and a pollution perspective. Like, again, we have to change the way we do things. So we just, you know, I've had many people go, "Wait a minute, does 100% plant-based mean that the cows eat grass?" And my wife came up with the best response, and co-founder. She said, "No, it means that they're still in the field," right? We just removed that entire part of food system that's 99% unsustainable, 99% pollution, 99% unethical, in my opinion. And we focus on ingredients that are exclusively made out of plants that are going to make your eyes roll back in your head. And at the same time, when you're done, you're going to feel great, so that you can go to yoga class, you can hit the gym, or you can go chase kids around. Whatever your jam happens to be, you're locked and loaded and ready to go. And, you know, I have yet to meet anybody that doesn't want to live a life that's full of more vitality, more energy, more optimism. And, you know, the ironic twist to all of this is that the food actually is a better, smarter move for the whole planet. So, you know, I can't wait to have you. I've got a cookies and cream shake with your name on it. And like I said, my only caveat is please bring your appetite.
Well, so we'll check back in with you in 50 years and see where you're at, because you'll still be alive then. So,
well, I'm hoping that, yes, I'm okay. So I'm supposed to turn 40 next month, which is crazy for so many reasons. But our goal for Next Level from the beginning has been that, you know, we wanted to build at least 1,000 restaurants, whether that took 10 years or it takes 2 or 3 decades. And so, God willing, and the creek don't rise, as I'm fond of saying, not only will we be able to drive our own health forward as we as a, you know, species make better and better decisions, but we're going to be able to drive business forward. And, you know, if greed is good, it was the motto of the 20th century, then I think that the 21st sort of creed needs to be that business can be good for all, done right, done sustainably. And I'm talking all stakeholders. I'm talking team members. I'm talking guests in that order, which I know is crazy. But from the beginning, we thought, well, let's take great care of our team members and then great care of our guests. You know, suppliers, communities. John Mackey, of course, is a proponent of conscious capitalism, where some of this has its roots, not all of it. But I mean, let's just be real. It's just common sense that if everybody's winning, everybody's winning. And so let's build businesses that reflect that instead of the, you know, I'm going to be the one to die with the most toys, greed is good mentality. It's let's make sure that everybody has a seat at the table.
Well, so you have another 50 years to keep building, another 60 years, actually.
I hope 60.
You're living till 100. You have another 60 years to keep building.
Well, and they say that kids born after, I think it's after 2000, there is a legit argument, even with the average life expectancy dropping for the second year in a row, which is a whole nother conversation, that 120 is healthily plus is not a silly number. So, you know, as my wife, who's making lots of fun of me for hitting the midlife mark, I'm like, I hope, honey, I'm at like third life, not midlife, third life. So I'm going to keep doing what I can, you know, focus on what I can control and influence, eat right, sleep well, exercise, and God willing, the creek don't rise. Yes. Healthy to 100 and maybe beyond. We'll see.
Yeah. And by then there'll be 1,000 Next Level Burgers all around.
Well, I hope by then we're given Chipotle, you know, run for their money at the 2,500 plus count. But, you know, you got to make sure that you are walking before you're running and running before you're sprinting. And our goal, as lofty as the aspirations are, we want to make sure that we grow as aggressively as we can do so wisely. We want to build a good, strong, solid foundation, you know, and that is how we've approached everything for Next Level. And that's, you know, that hasn't been binary. That's been much squishier, right? That's been more shades of gray, because you got to figure that out. It's like Yvon Chouinard with Patagonia. They almost blew up their business several times, building one of the greatest American brands that there was and is, and yet had to figure out that if we do more than 50% growth year over year, you know, the seams start to come apart. And so, you know, we're figuring that out. And, you know, we don't have the absolute, and, you know, we don't believe that we have the absolute sort of, this is how we're going to do it, because in our creative commitments, it's laid out in black and white, you know, a constant state of evolution, adapt or die.
Well, thank you so much for joining me today. That is such a great way to end it. Adapt or die.
Yes.
Thank you
yes.
so much.
You're so welcome, Holly. I cannot wait to feed you in my hometown of Denver. So I hope you come very, very hungry. Don't be afraid to bring friends. And you know, I look forward to meeting you in person.